This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. Since ancient times, humankind has sought news it can use. In the 21st century, books, computer programs, and other delivery systems offer countless how-to guides. Although news didn't travel as fast during early Greek and Roman times, there was a wealth of information on remedies, precautions, and inventions to make ancient life easier. Some were based on science, others on superstition. Classical historian Vicky Leon has compiled a collection of 88 tales of Greek genius and Roman know-how in her new book, How to Mellify a Corpse and Other Human Stories of Ancient Science and Superstition. She joins us from member station KVPR in Fresno, California. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
What does mellify mean?
Well, mellify means to embalm in honey. And you might want to know why I decided to call my book that. I had a specific person in mind. Alexander the Great. He was a terrifically organized guy, and he left pre-need funeral instructions. He wanted to be embalmed in honey, a process called mellification.
Now, what was it about honey that made it good for embalming?
Well, actually, it's been proven to be just as good these days. In fact, some scientists in Iraq proved that mellification does work. It preserves tissue very well and, in fact, has some particular uses and benefits for burn victims, for example.
Mm. Now, is it the Egyptians had 900 remedies with honey?
They had at least that many. And, of course, the Greek and Romans often copied the venerable Egyptian recipes. So they had a number of them as well.
Hmm. And it could also be toxic, though.
Well, yes. Oh, yes. You're talking about the mad honey.
The mad honey.
Which I think is a delightful term. When bees gather nectar for honey, if they happen to be in an area where there are laurel and rhododendron, the nectar, the honey, is somewhat toxic. It's not toxic and, well, it could kill you, but mostly it just sort of intoxicates you. And several of the Greek armies were felled by episodes of finding honey or else having enemies plant this mad honey in their path. And upon eating it, you know, they fell into this intoxicated state.
You write about what you call the Mac of the millennium, an analog computer that sprang from the mind of a Nova Bright thinker in ancient Greece. Explain what it was. I don't think I can even pronounce the name.
Yes, well, they call it Antikythera, which is after a Greek island because that's where it was found. And when it was first discovered, it just looked like a corroded lump of bronze and something else. So no one could figure out what it was until just very recently. Now they do agree that it represents the world's first analog computer, but what was it computing? And it has all these layers of intricately meshed gears. And the point of it was to mimic the movements of the planets and the stars and the sun as the Greeks understood them to be. They have finally reconstructed these gear trains, and they figured out that it measures these different cycles that are still used by astronomers. One of them is the Saros cycle that allows for eclipse prediction, and that was the main point of it, to predict solar and lunar eclipses, because they were a big deal in the ancient world.
You write about the first surround sound, and without the ancient Greeks, there would be no Hollywood Bowl. What were some of their acoustic tricks?
Well, first of all, they sited their open-air theaters very cleverly and very carefully, so they were always bowls and they were into a hillside. And they also took into consideration how the winds blew. But beyond that, French researchers recently who've been studying the open-air theaters for many years, they took a look at the stone seats at Epidavros. What they discovered at Epidavros was that the seats are stone. They're still in place, and most of them are still the original ones. And they looked at those, and they're smooth marble on top, but they're corrugated on the vertical, and they just thought it was a design element. But they found out that the corrugation acted as a kind of baffle for the sound, and it blocked the low-frequency sounds, you know, like the crowd murmurs and so on, and it transmitted the higher-frequency sounds, specifically the voices of the chorus and the actors. And so that has been one of the revelations that's come out of studying these seemingly simple ancient devices, and in this case, you know, an entire system.
It's fascinating that when you're writing about the ancient world, because the beginnings of real science coincided with the birth of Greek philosophy. Did the two complement one another, or were there problems? I mean, it seems a lot of thinking was done in the areas of chemistry and botany and astronomy and physics, but why wasn't more scientific progress made?
Frankly, I think that a lot of scientific progress was made. It's just that in some cases, we're not aware of them because they've been lost to us. Mm-hmm. In other cases, we're not aware of them because they're enigmatic, like the Antikythera mechanism. And so I do believe that we should give them more credit, perhaps. In fact, given the very simple tools that they had, I thought they made remarkable strides.
Vicky Leone is the author of How to Mellify a Corpse and Other Human Stories of Ancient Science and Superstition. She joined us from member station KVPR in Fresno, California. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Leanne.